This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the program, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve. A lot of chatter coming in via Twitter all show long. We'll get back to that as well. And of course, our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Marty Biron. You know, Marty, of course, is a studio analyst for MSG TV, covers the Buffalo Sabres as well as the NHL in general. Marty, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Marty. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. It was a tough loss for the Sabres last night against the New York Rangers, and they finished their seven-game homestand on a bad note. They could have been 4-2-1 out of that seven games, and it would have been acceptable, but to go 500 at 3-3-1, I think we're looking at the last, 25 games or so, and it's going to be a tough task for them to make the playoffs.
Yeah, certainly an uphill climb for a Buffalo Sabres team that earlier in the year went on that incredible run to be atop the NHL and certainly hasn't gone their way since then, Marty. The goaltending has really been pointed out as one of the key issues in Buffalo, and I mean, that's certainly an area of your expertise. What are you seeing when you look at the Buffalo Sabres goaltenders right now?
It's very difficult to be comfortable in the crease for both Linus Ullmark and Carter Hutton right now because the Sabres are not defending well at all. They had a couple of games. Look, they start the homestand losing 7-2 to the Chicago Blackhawks. They won 5-4 against the Minnesota Wild, but then lost 6-5 to Carolina. You look at this and you think, man, like somebody's got to be able to defend. They're giving up wide open looks to the other team. And you remember the game-winning goal the Winnipeg Jets got against the Buffalo Sabres. It's basically a Blake Wheeler left unattended on the back post for a wide open net with, 3.5-4 minutes left in the game. That just can't happen. So for both Ullmark and Hutton, it's hard to play the game and think, okay, I've got all my reads now, because there's so many breakdowns in front of them. And then you see last night against the New York Rangers, Kevin Hayes walks in all alone in the slot, and he does a fake shot pass to Pavel Buchnevich on the side for a tap-in. The goaltender is thinking, well, I got to take the man in the slot, because if he shoots the puck, I got to be ready for it. But there's so many other options. So it's hard for both Hutton and Ullmark right now to feel really confident in themselves, to feel that they are, on top of their games. And I think it's a byproduct of the way the Sabres play defensively.
Marty, just sticking with the Buffalo Sabres, I was watching that game last night on MSG, and as you mentioned, I mean, this was a one-goal game in the third period. The Buffalo Sabres were right in it, and, Jeff Skinner had a couple of goals. And, watching that game, it looked like a little bit of a fragile team to me. And as you mentioned, the Sabres are very much in a playoff race. They have a good shot at, getting one of those last wild card spots right now. But to you, is this a team that right now is just struggling maybe a little bit with confidence? I realize that's a cliche in the hockey world, but is that something that applies to the Sabres right now, in your opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. At this time of year, it's all about how well do you defend. You look at the New York Islanders and their success they're having, they're defending well. And Carolina wins a game against, the Edmonton Oilers last night. Curtis McElhinney played well, but I thought Carolina defended well. All the teams that are having success, it's about defending. It doesn't matter if you go out there and shoot 40 pucks on net and have 20 scoring chances, because you may run into a hot goalie, you may hit a few posts, but, everybody that is having success right now is defending well. So the Sabres, the problem is they're spending, like, at times upwards of a minute 20, a minute 30 in their zone. They're not really closing in. They're not taking what people say, the time and space away from the other team. And that's how you lose your confidence, because you spend so much time in your zone. One mistake, and it's in the back of the net, because it's a very big mistake usually, And by the time you get the puck and you look to go on offense, you're exhausted. You're tired because you just killed, you know, 45, 50 seconds in your own zone. All you got to do is dump it in and change. So, yeah, their confidence is shaken. Jack Eichel is searching for himself a little bit right now. He had a six-game point streak before last night, and it was a very quiet six-game point streak. So he's been a little bit searching. I've seen him change his sticks. I've seen him, you know, try the left side of the power play. Now he's going to the right side and back and forth. So it is a fragile psyche right now for the Sabres.
You know, Marty, you talk about confidence and consistency, and you know this is the Sabres team, as Drew touched on, was able to put on a big winning streak earlier in the season. But I think I saw a stat yesterday when I was watching the highlights from the game that said that the Sabres are 2-8 in their last 10 games after a win. So what is it about them that just they aren't able to build on the success from one game to the next?
Well, again, it's about playing defense. The question was brought to the players a lot last night. Why is it you haven't won back-to-back games since December? Why is it you haven't won back-to-back regulation games since October? And, you know, the players, when you're a player, you don't really look at that. You play the game. It doesn't matter if you won or lost the game before. You just play the game. And I think a lot of them were surprised by that statistic to say, hey, we haven't won back-to-back games since the middle of December. This is unreal. Like, but it all comes down to how well you defend. And we've seen it before where teams will go in on a streak and they'll win 1-0 and 2-0. They'll post back-to-back shutouts. Their goalies will be good. But when you look into the statistics, they like are giving up 6 or 7 scoring chances a game, and that's it. But right now, it's the complete opposite. They want to outscore their opponent. They want to go on the rush. They want to have 4 men jump off the ice. So you're not going to win games or be consistent by just trying to outscore teams. We've seen it. We've seen the Washington Capitals trying to outscore teams for many, many years. And what happened? They were always, you know, ousted in the playoffs by a good defensive team or by a Pittsburgh Penguins team or, you know, but as soon as Barry Trotz got into Washington, their focus was on defense. And there was a big difference. The New York Islanders last year were the worst defensive team. This year, in scoring chances allowed, they're third in the National Hockey League. So, you know, a system helps you win game, helps you being consistent. And the teams that are having success right now are the teams that are really sticking to that system and playing it well.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. Marty is a studio analyst for MSG. You, of course, know him as well from his work with TSN. Marty, shifting away from the Sabres, Jordan Binnington is one of the best stories in the NHL right now, almost yep. single-handedly carrying the St. Louis Blues back to playoff prominence. 11-1-1 in his 13 starts for the Blues. 931 save percentage, 1.69 goals against average. This is a goalie who's been a career minor leaguer up to this point. When you watch Jordan Binnington, what are you seeing right now?
Well, what I'm seeing is a goalie that's very structured, that doesn't have a lot of movement in his game, and I think that's the key. Look, Jake Allen in St. Louis is a total opposite of Binnington. Jake Allen is outside of his crease. He backs into his crease fast. He moves lateral. There's a lot of movement in Jake Allen's game. And so to be able to be consistent and have, you know, success throughout the year, you have to be so precisely timed in everything you do. Jonathan Quick is that type of goalie, and you've seen some up and down, some inconsistency with Jonathan Quick. When he gets hot, great. But if you have so much movement in your game, it's hard to stay consistent. Binnington is about structure. It's about not over moving in any way, shape, or form, not wasting any energy. It reminds me a lot of, you know, Carter Hart this year with the Philadelphia Flyers. That's why those type of goalies are coming in and having success, because they're keeping their game very simple. Binnington also is extremely quick on his edges. So I've seen at times where, you know, he gives up a rebound, he's on his knees, and then all of a sudden the puck is behind the net and it's about to go on a wraparound. And he gets a left edge on the ice, and he pushes to his right, and boom, he's on the post. And so that is, to me, that is a sign of a goaltender that has worked a lot in his technique, that has a strong lower body, that has a strong core, and understand what he needs to do to have success on the ice. But most importantly, I think what St. Louis is getting right now is that they know Bennington is going to play the same way every night. It's not like one hot night, one cold, one hot, one cold. The inconsistency that Jake Allen has shown with the St. Louis Blues, because the Blues have a good team. You know, 2 months ago we were talking, well, they're going to trade Shen, they're going to trade Parayko, they're going to trade everybody. Now you realize they have a fantastic team. It was just to get a little bit of stability night in, night out from the goaltender, and Bennington is really giving the St. Louis Blues that.
Marty, over the years, we've asked you about Robin Leonard many times. I can remember at least three or four times asking you about Robin Leonard when he played for the Buffalo Sabres. And I just have to ask you about Leonard because last year, I think you'd agree, he didn't have his best year with the Sabres. And recently, the Sabres defeated the Islanders with Robin Leonard in net. But he hasn't been losing many games as of late. He's got a .929 save percentage, a year in which most goaltenders, as you know, their save percentages have gone down. But yep. for you as a former goaltender and someone who watched Leonard for so many years with the Buffalo Sabres, how nice has it been kind of in the sense of redemption for him to have such a great year and be in a playoff position with the Islanders right now?
Oh, it's fantastic to see Robin do so well in New York and Thomas Greiss as well, because, you know, last year Thomas Greiss, he struggled, and it was a tough year for the New York Islanders goaltender. So you look at Robin Leonard, I had a chance to talk to him after the morning skate. Obviously, he faced a lot of the Buffalo media and talked about a little bit about his recovery and where he is right now at a stage of life. But I wanted to talk to him more about some of the changes he's made in his game. And he was telling me that, you know, talking with Mitch Gordon, the goalie consultant, the director of goalie with the Islanders, and we've seen what Mitch has done with the Sabres and Predators and Washington Capitals, you know, they shortened the paddle a little bit of Robin Leonard. They lengthened the stick but shortened the paddle because they felt he was given a lot of goals through his arm where the puck was sliding between his blocker and his body. So by doing that, like, his arm was a little bit more straight alongside his body, there was less bad goals going through. Same thing about his positioning. It was about just keep the game simple. Don't chase the game. You're a big goalie. You don't have to chase the game. Stay a little deeper. Get your better reads. Shorten your movement. And use your big frame to be able to make those saves. So I've really liked his game. But again, it all comes down to the structure. The New York Islanders play so well defensively that as a goaltender, it's easier to read the game. It reminds me of when I played with the New York Rangers with John Tortorella. Torts had a very strong defensive system. For us, the goaltenders, it was almost easier to see where the threats were coming from, where the shots were going to come from, how to handle certain situations. And the same way right now in New York, it took him, you know, a good 6 weeks to maybe get himself feeling comfortable in that system. But since about the middle of November, early December, Robin Leonard, Thomas Greiss, the Islanders, they've been really good because they all work together and the reads are so much easier.
You know, Marty, going back to the Sabres, they're a team that sits just 4 points back of the Penguins for the second wild card spot. So clearly they're still in the race with, you know, a lot of season left. But at what point do you think some of the players that are down on the farm in Rochester get a look? The Victor Olofsson in his first year pro here in North America having a really good season. You got Alexander Nylander. Are there any players that are coming up from the Americans who are going to maybe push their way onto this team this season?
I think so. I think we're going to see it probably early March. I mean, Jason Botterill did the same thing last season. He waited a little later in the season for guys like Alex Nylander to come up. C.J. Smith came up and played a few games. Now you have C.J. Smith up with the Buffalo Sabres. He was really good in the American League this year. Lawrence Pilot had a really strong start to the season with the Rochester Americans, especially producing some offense. He is part of the top six right now with the Buffalo Sabres. But I think until the Sabres fall really out of the race, you're going to see Phil Housley and Jason Botterill try to stick with the group of players that they have right now and make that push for the playoffs. But you talk about, you know, the Sabres are 4 points behind the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I totally understand that. But I think it's going to take about 96, maybe even 97 points in the East to make the playoffs. So that is a tough task for the Sabres. And for the Pittsburgh Penguins to get to 96, all they'd have to do is be four games over 500 for the rest of the season. So, I mean, that's not a huge task for the Pittsburgh Penguins to get to 96 points. Columbus, who knows what's going to happen, but if they trade Panarin and if they trade Bobrovsky, I think they're going to go and get some big pieces to help them as well. So I think it's going to be tough. I don't see a lot of teams ahead of Buffalo falling out, and I see Carolina getting even stronger. So for Buffalo, I'm thinking early March, you may see Nylander, you may see Olofsson, you may see Rasmus Asplund, who is a two-way type centerman with the Rochester Americans, come up. You know, you may see Brandon Gouley on defense come up and play some games. So there is a lot of candidates in Rochester to come in and get some NHL experience.
Marty Biron is a studio analyst for MSG, covers the Buffalo Sabres. Marty, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Marty.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
When we come back, we discuss what was a bad night and a perplexing week for the Minnesota Wild. We give an update on the Jets' defense for this tonight's game against the Senators. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bruce, did we hear correctly that you are predicting a playoff spot?
I think I said that, yeah.
Can you elaborate?
We're going to make playoffs. That's about as elaborate as I want to get. Yeah, you want me to predict how many wins we're going to have in the last month and a half? No. We're going to win. We're going to make the playoffs.
Minnesota Wild head coach Bruce Boudreau.
Playoffs?
Yeah. Channeling his inner Joe Namath.
Playoffs?
Guaranteeing that the Minnesota Wild are going to be a playoff team. Not if they collapse like they did last night.
I will say, in his defense,
yeah,
he didn't say what year.
But fair enough. He could be next year.
He could have said next year. He could have said the year after.
You know, and they still
I love
very,
Brucey Boudreau.
They still very well might make the playoffs. They're currently sitting in the last wild card spot. With 60 points, they're a point up on the Vancouver Canucks, and the Wild have a game in hand.
Can we agree that this is the worst playoff race in Western Conference history?
It's funny.
Promise me you're not going to call it a turtle derby, because if I hear that again, I'm going to throw something through my television.
No, well, I don't know. That's what Ray Ferraro has been calling
everybody's
it.
Everybody's been calling it a turtle derby.
Wait, it goes to show you how isolated I am. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, it's because you watch a game on TV every now and then.
I was going to say, if I didn't spend every single night at Bell MTS Place, then maybe I'd understand what you're talking
about.
But
you'd be very lonely. You'd
be very, very lonely.
That's true.
Yeah. A Mario Kart race. That's more. There you go.
No, because it's fast. Yeah. And these are all. Man, all I could know is, and I've been saying this.
No, but it's a Mario
I've been saying this since we've been talking to, since we talked to Bill Daly, and I tried to get him to admit that that this false parrot. No big deal. Eagle Curve 10th anniversary show. But no.
It seems like 3 years for you, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, 10 years flew by. But anyways, no, it's funny how.
The fake parody.
The fake parody in this league is just. I get it. I understand why the NHL does it, because they want fans to falsely believe that their team is in it for as long as possible. But the fact of the matter is, it's so embarrassing, especially when you watch some of these teams. How are they? The fact is, we were joking about Chicago and LA, and they're still within striking distance.
Yeah. So the Minnesota Wild last night were in New Jersey, and
Chicago actually is the craziest. The fact that Chicago is in the playoff race right now, and the fact that Anaheim lost 13 games in a row and were 3 points out of a playoff spot.
They lost something like 21 of the last 24, and they were still in the race.
And yeah, now they're out of it.
They're out of it now. Anyways, last night in New Jersey, the Minnesota Wild had a 4-1 third period lead.
Yep.
They pulled the goaltender, in comes Corey Schneider. Corey Schneider hasn't won a hockey game since 2017.
Which is insane.
Since December of 2017.
You know I'm a big Corey Schneider fan, so...
You're a fan of everybody.
No.
Especially if they're Devils.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was an excellent goaltender.
Injuries, all sorts
injuries,
of things. Yeah.
The injuries and age have caught up to Corey
Absolutely.
Schneider. He's had a fantastic career.
Yes.
So I just want to mention that I mean, Corey Schneider has not had a good year, but...
2 years.
Well, yeah, I know. Injuries have a big
He had
part
a great night last night. So it's 4-1 for the Minnesota Wild. They should be home and cooled against a New Jersey team that's definitely not going to make the playoffs. And they managed to blow a 3-goal lead. They lose in overtime after Devan Dubnyk does his greatest Washington Generals impersonation with the puck. I don't know what that was. Anyways, this Minnesota Wild team is just, you have Bruce Boudreau guaranteeing they're going to make the playoffs. You have a team that is in an absolute tailspin. Yet you have ownership giving new general manager Paul Fenton permission to do whatever he needs to remake this team even if it means costing them a playoff spot.
Well, and, you know, just to touch on Bruce Boudreau's comments, though, right? Because he made them on, I believe it was KFAN.
No, he made them pregame.
No, but he made them on...
I think he did make them on KFAN.
Paul Allen's show in Minnesota.
Oh, okay. And then maybe he reiterated it with the scrum.
I think he was asked about it afterwards.
Right, and then Michael Russo came out with the article talking about how ownership has given Paul Fenton the green light to make trades, right?
Right.
But Bruce Boudreau is in the last year of his contract, as opposed to Paul Fenton, who's in the first year of his contract, right? So obviously Bruce Boudreau is trying to get his team... Well, they're in a playoff spot right now, but he's trying to get them back into the playoffs this year, even if that means they're going to be first-round fodder for the Jets or the Nashville Predators. Nobody thinks this Wild team is a Stanley Cup contender. If they get the goaltending, maybe they have a chance. If Devan Dubnyk is able to steal two or three games against the Jets or Predators, I don't think that's going to happen.
No,
I'm just saying that's the only way. If Devan Dubnyk plays otherworldly, that's the only shot. I mean, it happened last year with Marc-Andre Fleury, but my point is Bruce Boudreau is still going to coach this team to win, regardless of what trades Paul Fenton ends up making.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any problem with Boudreau saying that.
Here is Michael Russo of TheAthletic.com, who's covered the Wild for forever now. He was at the Star Tribune before he was at The Athletic. Here's Michael Russo on TSN Radio Vancouver talking about the job that Paul Fenton has done in his first year as Wild general manager.
I think there's been some mismanagement here. You know, last summer he tried to make some trades. I understand he wasn't able to do it, but then he went out and he signed a bunch of fourth liners and 13 forwards and JT Brown, and who's absolutely awful here. Matt Hendricks, who Matt at this point in his career is what he is. Then Eric Fair, who was having a good year until he got hurt, and since he's been back, he's been really bad. And then Greg Patteron, who started off well here and has been pretty bad here for the last month and a half. So that didn't work. Then the Niederreiter for Victor Rask trade was just terrible. I think that they figured they wanted to get out of Nino's contract, but the problem is they traded for somebody that is just not very good, and now he's hurt. And the Aberg move, again, very curious. Didn't give up much for him. Was getting a couple points, but then now he's been hurt for the last seven games. And the big weird moves were the two depth defenseman moves. They traded for Brad Hunt, which, again, that's fine. But then 2 days later, they claim Anthony Boteto off waivers. And, you know, I don't care how much you love him, you can't make that move at that time. You just traded for Hunt. You got to have more foresight with that. And what it did is it put his roster at 23 men. So now a team that had won three in a row and four or five going the All-Star break, one big reason for that was the really quality play of Ulrich Sinek and Luke Cunningham. And he adds Boteto for zero reason. And all of a sudden, you can't bring up Cunningham and Ulrich Sinek. They get out of the gate completely terribly. They kick off the most popular guy off the team to now get Cunningham and Ericsson back up to Prosser, which pissed off the locker room. And now Boteto is playing on the second pair, playing the left shot. Because they don't have a right shot D anymore because they got rid of Prosser, they moved Brodin to his offside. So they took a guy that was having a great year, and now he's been terrible for the last seven games, playing right side. And Boteto, the last two games, has pretty much single-handedly lost them the game. So to answer your question... so far, below average.
That was TheAthletic.com's Michael Russo absolutely torching Paul Fenton for some of the moves he's made as a rookie general manager for the Minnesota Wild. I mean, if you're a Wild fan, you know your team's not good enough. Now you got some serious questions about the moves the general manager's made. I mean, you don't love the Victor Rask for Nino Niederreiter trade. Nobody does right now. That the Hurricanes look like the winner there.
Well, and Russo mentioned Victor Rask is injured right now.
Right. But, I mean, he wasn't great even when he was in their
lineup.
Well,
I think Niederreiter is better than Rask.
Right. You said that when the trade happened. I mean, this is very perplexing times right now for fans of the Minnesota Wild. They continue to hold on to that final playoff spot in the Western Conference, but everybody wants to play the Wild in the first round because that's looking like a clear, easy, maybe a five-game series at best.
Sure, and that's what I think is so fascinating about the Wild right now. I think you expect them to make some moves, but when you talk about a guy like Eric Staal, Eric Staal has a 10-team no-trade list,
mm-hmm.
right? And apparently a lot of the contenders are on that list. So he has a lot of control over where he goes. We don't know if the Winnipeg Jets are on the no the no trade list. We have no idea of knowing if they're on there or not. But when you're talking about other players, right, you're talking about Jonas Brodins, you're talking about the Charlie Coyles. The question is Paul Fenton going to make some moves, Dave? It's how many moves is he going to make?
When we come back, Haley Salvian is going to join us. She is with TheAthletic.com. We're going to talk about the rivalry series going on between the Canadian and the U.S. women's hockey. And she had a great article looking back at the rivalry in its heyday. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Senators, 6 o'clock tonight. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, we're pleased to welcome to the program Haley Salvian. Haley, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure, Haley. Brought you on to talk about a couple things related to women's hockey. You have a great article on TheAthletic.com sort of looking back at the history and the bitterness and the rivalry between the Canadian women and the U.S. women, going back to sort of the origins of women's hockey as an Olympic sport, back to 08 in Nagano, and we remember the famous game in Salt Lake City in 2012.
98 in Nagano.
Pardon me, 98 in Nagano. I got my eights confused. Yeah. You know, and then you look at this rivalry series, which is happening right now between the Canadian women and the U.S. women. Series is tied up at one game apiece with game three of the series, the deciding game, going tomorrow in Detroit at Little Caesars Arena. Having looked at the series as it's happening right now, and you look at this and you look back at the rivalry back in the late 90s, what's the biggest difference in your mind between the two sort of time frames?
Well, I think the biggest difference is, you know, these players know each other now. They play together in the CWHL, the NWHL. You know, they're now being brought together at, you know, NHL All-Star Games these last 2 years. Whereas, you know, so now there's a bit of a familiarity there between the players. So, you know, it's still heated on the ice. They still want to beat each other. But at the same time, they know them. So they know that they're kind of a person, not just, you know, an object that's in your way. Whereas back in, you know, the first World Championships in 1990, and into 98 and even a little bit into 2002, the Canadians and the Americans didn't, you know, they didn't cross over very often. Canadians weren't playing in the NCAA yet. You know, Cassie Campbell Pascal played for University of Guelph. So did Jaina Hefford, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly. So, you know, they weren't crossing over in college. They weren't crossing over in professional leagues because there, you know, there weren't any real professional leagues yet. So, you know, talking to these players who played back then, you know, they said, you know, they were just a person in another color who, you know, I hated, and they were in my way as I was chasing my dreams. So they didn't want to get to know them. They didn't know them. And like I said, it was just a bitter rivalry back then because they just didn't know them and they didn't care to at all.
You know, Haley, just sticking with this article, and we'll tweet it out from the Illegal Curve account because it is an absolutely fantastic article. And the quote that stands out to me was from Sammy Joe Small, who's, of course, from Winnipeg and won a couple of gold medals in 2002, Salt Lake City, in 2006 in Italy. And the quote was, "The majority of my defensemen hated them and hated them with a passion," obviously talking about the U.S. team, "like they dressed up like them for Halloween." I absolutely love that quote for you. Is that one of the interviews that stands out for you with Sammy Joe Small about going back to the early 2000s, mid-2000s, and how much these two teams really did hate each other on and off the ice?
Yeah, that one definitely stood out to me. And I think that one was interesting because Sammy Joe Small was one of the few players to know Americans as people, not just adversaries. So, and as a goalie as well, she had a little bit of a different view of the rivalry. You know, she said, "It's a little different for me as a goalie because I wasn't, you know, getting, you know, I wasn't battling with them in the corners." And that's why she said her defensemen just hated them because the Americans were always going at them and going at them. And yeah, it's just funny, you know, the little things that you hear, the little anecdotes, you know, like dressing up like Americans for Halloween. And it's just, it's really, it's funny to look at it now because you would never think that that would happen in this, you know, current era of the player. So Sammy Joe is one that definitely stood out because she had that perspective of actually knowing Americans as human beings, not just adversaries. And but her teammates really weren't at that point yet.
You know, Haley, when I saw that Alex Rigsby got the shutout in game one, the name triggered something with me. And I remembered that I had done a Q&A with her 10 years ago when she became the first woman ever to be drafted into the USHL by the Chicago Steel. And of course, you know, her career has obviously blossomed and she's achieved. It's funny now looking back at that Q&A, a lot of the things that she, you know, sought out to do. And then, you know, you see what women are doing now more in terms of breaking barriers. And we saw them at the All-Star game, not just there as you know, fodder, but to actually like participate. Just how much of an impact are women now having across the board in hockey?
Oh, well, it's a huge impact. I mean, I feel like we've all seen the tweets and the videos of little girls immediately after Kendall Coyne Schofield took that lap, you know, going on the ice and saying to their parents, like, "Mommy, I want to be like Kendall Coyne. Watch me, you know, skate a lap around the rink." Like, that just speaks volumes. Like, that's a very concrete example of the impact of having women in these big spotlights, in these big moments. There's a direct correlation between watching a female doing something and a child saying, "I want to do that," and going to do that. So I think it's really huge that these women are in these positions and they're having these major impacts. At these two games, there's been just under 10,000 people in London and Toronto, and it's been mostly minor hockey teams of young girls going and watching their idols. And you know, in the back of their mind or even at the forefront of their mind, they're saying, like, "I'm going to do this one day. Like, I'm going to train. I'm going to keep playing hockey so I can, you know, be playing at Scotiabank Arena. I can go in the Leafs dressing room and wear, you know, Canada on my jersey," because they're seeing these women in these big moments in hockey. So I think it's really huge.
Haley Salvian is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. We're discussing Haley's article for TheAthletic.com, looking back at the history of the rivalry between the Canadian women and the United States women. Haley, I mean, you look back and right, you mentioned it's less of a blood feud than it was back, you know, 20 or so years ago. Do you think that the hockey is better than it was back in the late 90s? Or do you think that maybe because it's less of a hatred, a little bit of the edge has been lost?
No, I think if you were watching the games, you know, that first game in London, there was multiple, like, line, not full-on brawls, but multiple kind of, you know, battles around the net. You know, Megan Bozic got taken down by one of the Canadian defenders and everyone started going at each other, you know, and you had her teammate Laura Stacey in the brawl. You know, they play together in Markham, but, you know, once they're wearing Team Canada, Team USA, it doesn't matter. You know, you're my enemy. We're trying to beat you. So I think, you know, they do know each other, which adds a few more layers of respect there, and, you know, off the ice, the relationship's better. But, you know, talking to these girls, when I brought up the idea, like, "Hey, would you say that the rivalry is thawed?" They go, "Absolutely not. I think on the ice, it's just as heated as it's ever been." You see the line brawls all the time. I think 4 years ago, Casey Bellamy and Breanne Jenner fought their teammates in Calgary right now. And, you know, it was interesting. AJ Malesko gave me a really great quote about that. She thought, you know, being friends makes the rivalry more heated because nobody wants to go back to their team a loser. You know, you want to beat your teammate because you want to go back to your team and say that I'm the one that won. It's like, you know, when you're playing games at Thanksgiving dinner when you're a kid, no one wants to go to the dinner table and say that they lost to their brother in the game of hide and go seek. So I think they're friends off the ice, but on the ice, I think it's just as heated as it's ever been.
No, Haley, you know, further to your point, a lot of people don't realize this, but, you know, since 2014, when Team Canada won gold at the Olympics, you know, the U.S. has absolutely dominated Canada at the Women's World Championships. The U.S. has won the last four Women's World Championships. Obviously, last year there wasn't one because of the Olympics, but, you know, Canada has not won the Women's World Championship since 2012. So when you consider that, there's a lot at stake here tomorrow in Detroit with Canada and the U.S. in this series being tied 1-1. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Absolutely. And, you know, you can say that this is just a friendly, you know, there's no trophy, there's no prize, there's no check. But if you watch the game and you talk to the girls, they don't care. They just want to beat them. And to your point there, Canada hasn't won a major title since 2014. You know, they haven't won a Four Nations Cup. They haven't won a World Championship. And obviously they didn't win at the Olympics in 2018. So there's definitely been this shift of, you know, Canada kind of becoming this underdog to the Americans. And, you know, there's not that many people who would argue that against the fact that the Americans have surpassed Canada when it comes to women's hockey. So tomorrow is really huge. They're not playing for anything, but I think it's still going to be a really heated battle. You know, I think it's just, you know, of course, a three-game series between Canada and U.S. is going to come down to a winner-takes-all third game. I think that's perfect for the rivalry, actually.
Haley, do you think there's going to be any women able to crack the ranks of coaching in the NHL at some point? I mean, we've seen the NBA, of course, with San Antonio. They've had a female assistant coach. Do you think that there's the NHL is ready for that, to make that kind of move, or is there any prospects that are up and coming that could be, you know, potentially just soon down the road in the joining an NHL team?
I think it's something that will happen. I'm just not sure of when the timeline is. You know, one of my colleagues, Sanaya, she wrote a really great story about, you know, when is this going to happen? And I think it's really tough because, at least in Toronto, where I'm based here, there's only three women coaching in the Greater Toronto Hockey League. And that's problematic because, you know, if women aren't getting the opportunity to coach at even the kind of lower level rep hockey leagues, how are they going to move up to eventually coach in the NHL? It's tough because if women aren't getting in at the grassroots level, they're not going to be able to get in at the NHL level because they're obviously not going to have, you know, the experience enough to coach at the NHL. So I think it starts grassroots. I think there's definitely some female coaches coaching in the GTHL and in different leagues across Ontario and Canada. I'm not particularly sure of specific names, but I think if we want to see more women having the opportunity to coach at high levels, we need to give more women opportunities to coach at these grassroots levels. Because like I said, they're not going to be able to develop and really learn how to become a great NHL caliber coach if they're not even getting to coach, you know, the Pee-wee or minor bantam midget hockey teams in their local cities.
Last question for you, Haley. Haley Salvian of TheAthletic.com is our guest. How essential is it for the two women's professional hockey leagues to join forces? You have the CWHL, you have the NWHL. How essential is it for these two leagues to come together and create one superlative women's hockey league for North America?
I think it's really important. You know, you watch this Canada-USA series, that's the best. That is the absolute best players in women's hockey, you know, minus a few European players. Like, that's the best 40, 50 or so players in women's hockey playing against each other. So right now we don't have that in the CWHL and the NWHL because they're split. It's not best on best every night. You have maybe a couple of really good lines on each team, but you're not rolling four lines deep of the best women's hockey talent in the world every night. And that's what women's hockey needs to get to for it to grow. Because, you know, there was a blizzard in London, Ontario in the first game. You know, you could barely see on the roads and almost 10,000 people went to go watch that game because it was the best Canadians versus the best Americans. And I think if you can replicate that on a, you know, have two, three games every week and in your one league scenario with the best players playing each other every single game, you're going to start to see, you know, the numbers and the eyeballs starting to peak in the same way as it is with Canada USA. You know, over, I think it was over or almost 5 million people stayed up till 2 in the morning to watch the last gold medal final. So it's clear that there's an interest in women's hockey. It just needs to get to best on best, because people like watching the absolute top tier talent play each other because it's a great product. And I think one league will get women's hockey to that great product. But right now, that product just isn't there because the talent's diluted in two leagues with 11 teams. It's just not there yet.
Haley Salvian is with TheAthletic.com. We encourage you to read her great article about the rivalry between the Canadian and U.S. women's hockey teams. Haley, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
When we come back, we discuss the Vegas Golden Knights in a bit of a tailspin. Their head coach is none too happy. The Jets, of course, into Vegas next week, and we have a trade to announce. It doesn't involve the Jets, but we'll tell you about it on the other side. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I didn't like the way we played. Like, I thought we played about 10 minutes real good hockey tonight. There was no passion in our game. There was no aggressive forecheck in our game. We played a soft game, and in my opinion, we gave them 3 goals from our mistakes, not from what they deserved. And they're good. They played well. They, you know, I give them credit, but when you're going to give them 3 goals like that, you're not going to win many games.
That's Vegas Golden Knights head coach Gerard Gallant talking about his team. The Golden Knights struggling as of late. They're third in the Pacific Division. They've lost 5 straight games on home ice, which is hard to believe given how dominant they were at home last season.
The Vegas flu's over.
Yeah, at T-Mobile Arena. Things not going so well for the Golden Knights right now as they are firmly in third place in the Pacific Division. And it sort of seems like they're locked in there as we sit here, you know, 9 days before the trade deadline and a little less than 2 months away from the start of the playoffs. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day, and this segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com or check them out in person at the Cordon Village Mall. That's the corner of Cordon and Lanark. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Quick update from around the NHL before we get to the Golden Knights. A trade has been consummated between the Vancouver Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers. Going to the Edmonton Oilers is Sam Gagne, who has been buried at the AHL level, and going to the Vancouver Canucks in what is a bit of a curious move is Connor McDavid. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. It's
true.
Ryan Spooner.
That's not funny, Drew.
It's entirely plausible, in fact. Ryan Spooner, who the Oilers acquired earlier this year from the New York Rangers, goes to the Vancouver Canucks. Sam Gagne goes to the Edmonton Oilers. Both players are playing at the AHL level.
Gagne is actually playing in Toronto.
That's right. Gagne's was linked to Toronto, to the Marlies, even though the Canucks affiliate is in Utica.
He didn't want to go all the way to New York.
Didn't want to go to New York, so he went to Toronto instead.
Well, it's interesting, Dave, because you have to have permission to do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you saw that actually last year with Tanner Kaspik.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? He played for the Moose.
Not only did he play in the playoffs.
For the Moose.
Which was really weird. Yeah. St. Louis pick, but a Brandon kid.
And we should Sam Gagne is a former first round pick. And not just a first round pick, he was 6th overall.
Yeah, but that was a lot of years ago.
Well, and he was drafted by the Oilers, so, you know, nice that he might get an opportunity. That might just be a situation where, you know, he's going to get an opportunity to play in the NHL where you know, he wasn't getting an opportunity, you know, with the Vancouver Canucks. But he's actually put up really nice numbers, 12 goals, 37 points in 43 games with the Marlies. Obviously, you know, the Marlies are, perennial.
The Oilers are so bad that Gagne could step into their lineup and help them. I mean, Ryan Spooner.
I watched that game last night.
Yeah.
Aside from Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah.
I mean, the Oilers just can't generate offense. I actually thought one of the best Oilers players yesterday was Zuzhar Kara. I'm not joking. He was creating offense. And, you know, you look at some of the, like, Jesse Puljujärvi was just non-existent yesterday.
Especially after what his agent
said. Well, his agent came out and basically said, trade me.
It's poison.
It's poison. I mean, the agent came out and said the way they've handled me from the start of my career through, you know, today.
I get an agent has to protect this player, but I think it's just idiotic. I think you put your player in because all that does, even if that's what you want, I mean, all that does is put all, I mean, think about it, all the media has to go and talk to Puljujärvi about it. They don't have a choice.
Yeah, I know. But
you have to.
You reach a point of frustration. I mean,
yeah, but
I saw a tweet that said, I mean, you follow the AHL closer than I do, but Bakersfield has won, what, 11 games in a row?
I think 12 or 13. No, it might even be 14 now.
So 14 games in a row. They're the Oilers affiliate. And somebody
said, Dave is the Moose insider.
I know. And somebody said on Twitter, and I thought it was a good point, are you telling me that Puljujärvi playing with, you know, guys his own age,
14-0,
winning 14 games in a row, isn't better for his development right now than playing with this tire fire of an Oilers franchise at the NHL level?
But I've been saying that about prospects forever. I mean, I think that too often these guys are rushed to the NHL, especially guys who are high draft picks like Puljujärvi, and there's high expectations on them. And the best thing that can be done is you leave them to bake in the oven for
marinate.
A while, and you don't need to rush them to the NHL. Like look, we saw it with Alexander Burmistrov with the Atlanta Thrashers.
Mm-hmm.
The Atlanta Thrashers tried to rush Alexander Burmistrov into the NHL, and what ends up happening is you miss really, really critical development in the American Hockey League. And we talk about it. Look, the NHL is not a developmental league.
No, but it's crazy. I mean, when the Thrashers did that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Dave, for interrupting. But
that's
when the Thrashers did that, it doesn't justify why they did it, but they did it because they were a badly run franchise who always needed their new first round pick to provide, quote unquote, a shot in the arm to the fan base or to the, you know, to maybe garner some attention in the market.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Edmonton Oilers, and I know you're a badly run franchise, so there's no question about that.
I thought this was a segment about Vegas.
I know, but we're going to talk to Jesse Granger of TheAthletic.com, who covers the Golden Knights, next segment. So
can you imagine, you know, sorry to cut you off, can you imagine that, you know, we were talking about Jesse Puljujärvi possibly going second overall?
Sure.
I mean, when you look at Lion A and Pierre-Luc Dubois, you ask anybody, and we've asked Aaron Portsline and Brian Hedger and others who cover the Blue Jackets, Jody Shelley. I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois has arguably been their best player, aside from Artemi Panarin.
Yeah, he's a good player.
I mean, forward. Seth Jones is their best defenseman. But Puljujärvi almost looks like a bad pick at number four.
Right. Well, right now he looks like it doesn't seem like he's going to turn his career around with the Oilers. But my point, Dave, I mean, after you fire Chiarelli, isn't that the perfect opportunity to just hit reset? You send him back down to Bakersfield. You get him playing with those guys who've won 14 games in a row. Maybe he contributes there. Maybe not. We don't know. But we know he's not contributing at the NHL level. Where are the adults in the room there? Where is Keith? I mean, can't Keith Gretzky, who just made this trade as the interim general manager, go in and say, okay, Jesse, for your benefit, for your well-being, we're sending you to the AHL. We're going to keep you there for the rest of the season unless you absolutely tear it up and you become dominant. And for whatever reason, we reward you with a call up to the NHL level with 5 games to go. How is this still happening even after you fire the general manager that they continue to mismanage these assets?
Puljujärvi has 4 goals in 46 games.
I know.
Patrick Laine had 5 goals in 1 game.
I know. It's crazy.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up. 5 goals in 1 game, and Puljujärvi has 4 goals in 46 games. Now, I don't think Puljujärvi's a bust yet. I'm really not.
Okay.
He's 20 years old. It's way too early to call Puljujärvi a bust. But I agree with you.
Does he find success at the NHL level with the Edmonton Oilers franchise?
I think he can find success with the Oilers. But right now, I agree with you. And all I can do is call it as I see it, Drew. Every time I've watched Puljujärvi play with the Oilers, he just doesn't look ready yet for the NHL game. I agree with Dave. I think he should have been playing the entire season in the AHL with Bakersfield. I think last year, at times, he looked lost. And I do still think that he can turn his career around because he's only 20 years old. I don't know if that's with Edmonton or another team. It's just he's too young to say that he's a bust. But as it stands right now,
it's like
he's not good enough to be in the NHL.
It's amazing. They learned nothing from Nail Yakupov. It's the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
You let Yakupov develop in the AHL. And instead, what do? He comes to the NHL because he's the first overall pick. And God forbid a first overall pick not immediately play in the NHL. That means it's a bad pick, apparently, by default. Instead, they ruin him. Now, I don't know if he was going to make it or not, but they certainly didn't give him an opportunity to make it. They didn't give him the best, they didn't develop him in the best manner possible. And they're doing it again with Puljujarvi.
Yeah, no.
It's amazing.
I mean, again, we don't know. The one thing we have to obviously qualify is we don't know. We don't know if Puljujarvi doesn't want to play in Bakersfield. Maybe he's let that be known to the franchise. Whether the franchise allows a player to dictate where he's playing is another story, of course. But to me, I always err on the idea of you want these guys to develop properly. I mean, the fact of the matter is, like, you know, people talked about Kyle Connor and when he got sent down. And the fact is Kyle Connor didn't rip things up in the AHL right away. Kyle Connor actually went, I think he scored 18 goals over his final 20 that first season he was back with the Moose for the full season. So to me, after his 20 games in the NHL, and to me, you know, same with Jack Roslovic, that's the reason why you have these guys develop properly. And, you know, it's about evaluation of talent. And to me, it's a function of if you have the guys to properly evaluate your talent, you should be able to assess, is this guy NHL ready? And if he's not NHL ready, that's not a slag on your organization. There's plenty of prospects. I'm looking at the 2016 draft class. There's plenty of draft picks who hadn't even played in the NHL yet. But the truth is, you let them play in the AHL, you let them develop properly, you don't rush them into the NHL, and you don't do this to their career where their confidence is at an all-time low. I agree with Ezzie. I think it's not impossible for a young player to even with the same organization, to get things back on track if you have a change in philosophy. But you have to just really radically change things at Edmonton, I think, based on what we're seeing. Because not every guy is Connor McDavid, who has the natural ability and talent to overcome the adversity that is this organization.
When we come back, we'll talk about the Vegas Golden Knights. That segment sort of went a little off the rails, but that's okay. Jesse Granger of TheAthletic.com joins us. The Jets are in Vegas next week to meet the Golden Knights. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, he covers the Vegas Golden Knights. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Jesse Granger. Jesse, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Jesse. Obviously, this has not been a great week for the Vegas Golden Knights. Gerard Gallant expressed his displeasure on Tuesday night after the defeat, and that only followed up on Thursday night when they lost a 6-3 contest to the Toronto Maple Leafs to lose their last five games now at home ice on T-Mobile Arena. What's been going on with the Golden Knights that they've been struggling as of late?
Well, they've been playing some really good teams, and Gallant mentioned that after the game. He actually thought they played pretty well against Toronto, but they had six penalties. And if you give that high-powered power play six tries, it doesn't matter how good your penalty kill is, you're going to get bit. And they did, and it ended up costing them. And penalties have kind of been a trend for this team. Last year, they were the third fewest penalized team in the NHL. This year, up until the last 10 games, it was the same thing, third fewest in the NHL. But they've been taking a lot of penalties lately, especially Paul Stastny, who you guys know, and is a guy that is not known for taking penalties, being undisciplined. He's usually a pretty reliable guy, and he's been taking a ton of penalties, and it's been hurting him.
Yo, Jesse, there's obviously a big game coming up in Vegas tonight between the Predators and the Golden Knights, and I thought it was really interesting. I obviously follow you on Twitter, and you were tweeting out the lines, and obviously, you know, Gerard Gallant had the line blender out, and, you know, he still has that top line of Marchessault, Carlson, and Smith together, but then you have Cody Eakin between Max Pacioretty and Lindberg on that second line, and then Paul Stastny centering that third line between Alex Tuck, and then it's either going to be Brandon Peary or Thomas Nosek. Is that something that you're expecting to continue here as Gerard Gallant kind of finds that right mix with his forward lines?
Yeah, he's been mixing things up a little bit lately, and the Golden Knights are in the unique situation that they're about 8 or 9 points, depending on the night, behind San Jose and Calgary, chasing the Pacific Division title. But then they're also 8 or 9 points ahead of the next team, which would be Vancouver, trying to chase them. So they're kind of in, like, no man's land. They're not going to get caught. They're probably not going to catch anyone. So they have the opportunity to kind of test some things out. They're probably not going to lose any ground. You can see if something works. And they've been trying to get that third line to work all season. Pacioretty worked well with Eakin when Stastny was out. The two had some good chemistry. When Pacioretty was out, Brandon Peary came up, and that was when he had that 10-game streak where everyone in the entire North America noticed Brandon Peary's still in the NHL. He scored like 9 goals in 10 games, and that was playing with Stastny and Tuck. So I think Gallant's hoping that by breaking up that Tuck-Stastny-Pacioretty line that's been so good, they've been the most consistent line on the team so far, he's breaking that up in order to make, I think, what he thinks is 2 productive lines instead of just 1.
You know, Jesse, the trade deadline is 9 days away, and of course there's a lot of focus here in Winnipeg on it, I'm sure in Vegas as well, seeing if what teams can add. You got a chance to talk to some players and talk about the trading, their stories, the human element of it. What did you learn about from some of the Golden Knights and their experiences at the trade deadline?
I'm fascinated on how late these guys find out that they've been traded. Sometimes I'm mad when I don't get the scoop on the trade. Talking to these guys made me feel a lot better because I feel like I find out before they do sometimes. I was talking to William Carrier, and he got traded from St. Louis to Buffalo. Back when he was still 19, he was playing in junior hockey, and he's in the middle of a game in junior, and in the second period, the opposing players on the other team started kind of chirping him and mentioning a trade. And he's like, okay, well, I just got traded within junior a couple weeks ago, so I think that's what they're talking about. And they're all talking about it, all talking about it. They all knew. Then he goes into the second intermission, and his junior GM comes down and tells him, oh, Will, by the way, you've been traded from St. Louis to Buffalo. and then he had to go out in the third period and finish playing that game. So that was a pretty wild one. And then another good one that one of the guys told me was Braden McNabb, who was traded from Buffalo to the Los Angeles Kings at the time, and he was still in AHL. They had just finished a 4-game road trip. They're getting ready to fly back to New York, and just as they're about to get on their plane, they're flying commercial, obviously, because they're AHL, they're the American League, and right before they get on the plane, he sees a trade rumor saying McNabb possibly to L.A., but then he has to get on the plane, and he's now on a 2.5-hour flight with no internet access, wondering what organization he's going to play hockey for when he lands. He told me of all how excruciating the flight was and how he's talking to all his teammates, like trying to figure out what he should do. And sure enough, he lands, and he's now a Los Angeles King, so I had to pack his bags right away and leave.
Jesse Granger is our guest. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. Jesse, you look at the Golden Knights, and last year certainly was a magical season for that top line of Carlson, Smith, and Marchessault. And this year they're just not putting up anywhere near the numbers they had last season. Is that a function of them maybe reverting to the mean after such a fantastic season last year? Or do you think there's something more ailing that top line than what we know?
Well, the puck luck is certainly reversed. Last year, William Carlson was shooting at like a 20% clip, which is obviously not sustainable. Mm-hmm. Everything he touched was going in. This year, it's been the opposite. His goals are below his expected goals. Same with Riley Smith, same with Jonathan Marchessault. So there, if you look at the advanced analytics, the Corsi, the Fenwick, the high danger chances, everything you can look at per 60, they are dominating play. They've been one of the more dominant lines as far as puck possession and shots and chances. They're just not going in. It almost seems like the exact opposite from last year where they can't buy a goal. So I don't think they've been playing terribly, but obviously the points are way behind what they were last year. I think they still can become what they were last year. As the season goes on, I think that becomes less likely because obviously they're proving to not be that. But it all comes down to the forecheck, in my opinion. Last year, the majority of their goals came on fast break, odd man rushes, and transition that resulted from a turnover because their forecheck and backcheck is so aggressive. And this year, they just haven't been able to create those turnovers that they were last year.
Jesse, I wanted to ask you about the goaltending. Obviously, Marc-Andre Fleury has had another fantastic year, and he's a Vezina candidate right now, I would say. He might even be the front runner for the Vezina Trophy, but you know, he's played 51 games, and he's on pace to play close to 70 games at this point. And Malcolm Subban is obviously out of the lineup, but are you expecting Gerard Gallant to lean more on his backup as the weeks pass and we get closer to the playoffs, whether that's going to be, you know, Malcolm Subban when he eventually comes back, or if that's going to be with Max Lagesse, who I believe hasn't played in a game for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could tell you. I certainly hope he does. I wrote a story way back on December 14th saying that they were playing Flurry too much, and they've been doing it since. I believe it's starting to show. You mentioned Flurry's a Vezina candidate. I had him as the Vezina winner at our midseason awards for PHWA, and since then he's not been good. He's given up eight goals in the third period of the last three games. The Golden Knights have been just getting destroyed in the third period during this losing streak, and Flurry looks tired. He's a 34-year-old goalie that's got a ton of miles on him, and he's been fantastic early in games. He seems not as sharp in the third period, and I think it's because, like you said, he's on pace for 70 goals. They lost some confidence in Malcolm Subban early in the year. He had a couple really bad games where he gave up 7 goals against Calgary and 5 against Nashville, but I think he's in the top half of backup goalies in the NHL. I think he's a solid backup goalie, and they just need to trust him a little more. Will they? I have no idea, because it seems like they're ready to play Flurry until the wheels fall off. We'll see if that's a good decision or not.
You know, Jesse, we talk about positive stories, and you wrote one today about Marc-Andre Fleury and how he made the two dreams come true through the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And I was curious about, not specifically just about that story, which is a really good one about two boys coming from Canada, but about the Vegas Golden Knights and their influence in the community and what kind of impact they're having in the community, you know, now that they're kind of a little more entrenched within the Vegas community.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I grew up in Denver, where you have 4 professional teams in every major sport, and then I moved to Vegas, and I've been out here for 11 years. And when this city first got the Golden Knights, I told everyone, it's having a professional sports team is so much more than just the games that you get to go to. And obviously the practices, everybody loves those. But this team has been in the community a lot. Whether you go all the way back to before they'd ever played a game, the October 1st shooting here last year, this team went out and saw first responders and went to hospitals and went to blood banks and stood in line with the fans. And obviously that connected them with this city far stronger than anything ever could. And then since then, they've continued it. Yesterday they had the 2 Make-A-Wish kids in. They had them sign one-day contracts to become Golden Knights with George McPhee. Then they got to go in the locker room where they had their own custom lockers next to Fleury's. They got to go on the ice. One of them fought Ryan Reeves and beat him. First time Ryan Reeves has ever lost a fight on the ice, he said. This team, and it's been everything and that I expected and then some. They've really, really connected themselves with the community. I'm sure the Jets do the same thing up in Winnipeg. It's pro sports is so much bigger than just the games themselves.
Last question for you, Jesse. Jesse Granger covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. With the Golden Knights sort of entrenched in that third spot in the Pacific Division and with Calgary and San Jose playing so well, how does GM George McPhee approach this upcoming trade deadline? We know he was very active last season at the deadline, almost acquiring Erik Karlsson and acquiring Thomas Tatar. We know they traded prospect Nick Suzuki for Max Pacioretty at the beginning of this year, or just before the season started. So is this more of a stand pat trade deadline for George McPhee, or do you see him being active?
Yeah, I'm getting ready to talk to him, and hopefully I'll find out some more. But if you look at George McPhee's history, in 17 years in Washington, he had an in-season trade all 17 seasons. Obviously, like you said, last year with Vegas, he was aggressive at the deadline. History says he's going to do something. I think that he's going to make a move. He's always been aggressive. I don't see that changing with a team that he thinks has the same talent as last year. They have a chance to make a cup run. I don't know what he's going to do, because he's traded a ton of future assets on a team that only has 2 drafts under their belt to build their prospect pool. Like you said, last year they gave up a 1st, 2nd, and 3rd for Tomas Tatar. Then this offseason they gave him up with all those picks, plus another 2nd-round pick and Nick Suzuki, a 1st-round pick. So the cupboard is already starting to look a little bare. Cody Glass is their only top forward prospect that they'd want to give up. So I don't know. That kind of hamstrings them on what kind of deal they can make. I do think he wants to add a scorer. This team has struggled to score. Their leading scorer on the season is Alex Tuck. He's only got 40 points. There's almost no teams that have their leading scorer with only 40 points, especially good teams that are in playoff position. So I think Mark Stone would be a fantastic fit for this team, just like they would Winnipeg or Nashville or all the other contenders. I think Mark Stone plays the really hard 200-foot game that Gerard Gallant asks out of his players, like Riley Smith and Roland Carlson do. I just don't know if the Golden Knights are going to have the future assets to give up or be willing to give him up in order to make a move like that. But I do think McPhee is looking at one of those moves.
Well, Jesse Granger covers the Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. Jesse, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
When we come back, one final segment on this Saturday morning. We reset to the Jets and the Senators tonight. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
It's always tough when you see a guy go down for a little bit. But, you know, we've gone through it before. We have guys that can step in, step up. So hope he gets better as fast as he can. And in the meantime, we'll try and hold the fort down.
Winnipeg Jets defenseman Tyler Myers addressing the impact of the Joe Morrow injury. Morrow going to be out of the lineup for the next 2 to 3 weeks for the Winnipeg Jets. It's going to be a new-look Jets defense tonight, as Dustin Byfuglien will also miss tonight's game against the Ottawa Senators. According to head coach Paul Maurice, the expectation is that by holding Byfuglien out tonight, they should be able to get him healthy enough for the game on Wednesday in Denver. So Sammy Niku back in the Jets lineup tonight, same with Dmitry Kulikov. So a bit of a new-look Jets defense tonight when they play the Ottawa Senators. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. One final segment this Saturday morning. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Sean Lecumber is in town. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. And don't forget, just announced Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live. He's going to be at Rumors May 3rd through 5th.
Yeah, and you know, going back to Tyler Myers' comments there that we just played,
yeah,
you may expect you know, big number 57 to play more than he's been playing as of late. I wouldn't be surprised to see Myers, Dave, up around, you know, 22, 23, 24 minutes with Buff out, because as we know, you know, Buff plays big minutes. And you mentioned, you know, the new look, Ben Chiarot playing on the left side with Sammy Niku on the right side. If you think about it, the other two pairs are very familiar. Morrissey's going to stay with Trouba, and Dmitry Kulikov's going to play with Tyler Myers, right? Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's not going to be that different, but you know, obviously, you know, a big loss without Buff in the lineup. And
wonder what happens with that power play, which has been what, 0 for its last 17, the Jets power play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd like to see Josh Morrissey back on the power play.
Well, I think something will need to give on the Jets power play, because it certainly hasn't been good at all. I mean, Patrick Laine back up to the Jets number one unit on the power play, at least he was last game against the Avalanche, and he had some opportunities. They weren't able to get anything past Semyon Varlamov, but the Jets power play has been one of those areas of the team that's struggling, as the sort of whole team has sort of been average.
You're not actually
best.
Worried about that, though, are you? No. I mean, I'm not at all. And I mean, you know, we talked to Mike in the first hour, and he referenced his interview with Adam Lowry. Lowry's not concerned. I really don't believe the Jets coaching staff or players are worried. I mean, this has just been a little blip on the radar. And you mentioned it yourself, Drew. I mean, Patrick Laine is starting to look like the old Laine. Yes, he didn't score last game versus Colorado, and I'm not going to predict that Laine is going to score tonight, because I did that foolishly last game and he didn't score. But you know what? Maybe I will. Laine is going to score tonight.
I was going to say, a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
He's going to pop in a couple goals on the power play.
If it's foolish, then that's Ezra Ginsberg in a nutshell, let me tell you.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on who?
Good, oh, good, good. Thanks for bringing your A-game tonight. Mark Scheifele met with the media after the Jets' morning skate and before tonight's game against the Ottawa Senators. He had a lot to say about a player we've talked about a lot today, Mark Stone. Here's what Mark Scheifele had to say about Mark Stone of the Ottawa Senators.
Obviously a great player. I played on the line with him actually at that World Championships. You know, he was a fun guy to play with. He does it all. You know, he does all the right things. He does everything you want in a player. So obviously, you know, I'm not the GM, so I can't really give you much, but he's obviously a very good player.
Well, what do you think of the possibility of being teammates with him again?
I don't know why we're talking about it. We're about to play the Ottawa Senators, and he's on that team, so I don't know why we're talking about trades when I'm not the general manager, so...
There's Mark Scheifele obviously being put a little bit on the spot there by Paul Friesen of the Winnipeg Sun, but a fair question given what we've talked about for the last 3 hours. Well, of course, the Jets will be now accused.
Can you blame Scheif? Like,
No, but that's fine. You like, ask the question, he you
gave,
get the answer.
Well, and he gave his honest opinion. Yeah. Mark Stone is an excellent player. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But what is he supposed to say? I mean, he has no idea if Chevy and the Jets are going to acquire him, so you can't blame him for that answer.
No, of course, I don't blame him at all, but it was, you know, he did praise Mark Stone, as you would expect, given right. that, and that he do have a familiarity with each other, having played
headline,
together.
Mark Scheifele wants Mark Stone in Winnipeg.
But, you know, but
yellow journalism, Dave Minuke, yellow journalism. But, I mean, they did play together at the World Championships, which you can throw a little bit more fuel on the fire there. You know, it's what everybody's waiting for. We're 9 days ahead of the trade deadline. Next Saturday on the program, of course, as you've come to expect, the comprehensive team-by-team, division-by-division NHL trade deadline preview show. Of course, there might be deals between now and then, and we'll address those deals when they come. Quick programming note, the Wednesday show, there is no show on Wednesday, no NHL this week, because the Jets will be in Colorado to face the Avalanche on Wednesday, so we'll be back on Saturday, next Saturday, with the trade deadline preview show.
Well, right, and then we'll be on live on actual trade deadline following the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick. We're going to be on from 6 and 8 instead of our usual Wednesday show, so really pumped about that. And
yeah, trade deadline coverage all day long on Monday the 25th, and of course between now and then, I mean, everybody's focus, the games aren't secondary, but to some degree they are, is that everybody's just waiting to see what the next shoe to drop will be in terms of who presumably the Jets acquire at the NHL trade deadline.
Right, and not just the Jets, it's other teams
sure.
in the Jets division, right?
Nashville.
Because you hear Nashville might be big game hunting with a guy like Artemi Panarin, right? And why not? When you think about Nashville, guys, the Nashville Predators are only 2 points behind the Jets with
Jets
more games
two
played.
Games in hand.
Right, but the Predators have not been getting that secondary offense that they were getting last year.
Let me tell you something else, Ezzy. The St. Louis Blues, they have 4 games in hand on the Predators, and they're only 10 points behind the Preds. So you take those 4 games in hand.
Well, and that could be your first round matchup.
Right,
let
now,
me tell you, that's why, Drew, to your point, nobody wants to play. That's why you want to finish first, because I wouldn't want to be playing the St. Louis Blues.
Right now, it's way more important than it was a month ago when the Blues went on this heater. They've won 8 in a row. They've been the best team in the NHL as of late. And if you're telling me you want to play the St. Louis Blues, who are finally getting good goaltending and are a very good possession team, you've got to be. I mean, the Nashville Predators have to be sitting there saying, we have to figure out a way to overcome the Jets, because you take the Minnesota Wild in the first round, or you take the St. Louis Blues
right.
in the first round.
Exactly.
It's a hell of a different first round matchup. The Blues look very dangerous as we sit here 9 days ahead of the trade deadline, and you wonder, do they become a buyer? Right now, I would say that they're in the market to maybe purchase somebody ahead of the deadline.
Yeah, and you know, when you talk about the Blues, they were the most active team, or one of the most active teams in the summer, with the big Ryan O'Reilly trade and mm-hmm. you know, bringing in, you know, the likes of Patrick Maroon and bringing in David Perron. I agree with you. I would say that the Blues right now are probably in the market for maybe a bottom six winger or maybe a depth defenseman. But the way they're clicking right now, I agree. Nobody wants to play this team right now in the first round.
That's it for the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests, Jesse Granger, Haley Salvian, Marty Biron, Ian Mendez, and Mike McIntyre. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer James DeRoschuk, doing a great job on the board today. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.